This land is mine. God gave this land to me. This brave and ancient land to me. And when the morning sun reveals her hills and plains, then I see a land where children can run free. So take my hand and walk this land with me, and walk this lovely land with me. Though I am just a man, when you are by my side, with the help of God, I know I can be strong.
Well, good evening and happy Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom to one and all. I know we have Kirk and JB with us this evening. Going to pick up, returning a little bit to where we began last week, because this is the point that Christianity was created. I am kind of embarrassed, fellas, that I missed this for so many years, at least 16 or 17 of the 18 or 19 years that have been doing this. I don't know how I missed it. It's so obvious that God made every promise to Dode that Christianity claims was made to Jesus. You know, they claim that Jesus is the Messiah, and no, he's not. Dode is. They claim that that Jesus is the King of Kings. No. Dode is. They claim that Jesus is returning. No. Dode is. They claim that Jesus is the Son of God. No. Dode is. Every place that God made a promise to Dode, including that Dode's going to play an active role in the restoration and protection of his people, and of course, Christians think Jesus is coming back for his church. No. And so you have to say, what is it that caused this new religion to usurp every promise that God made to Dode and give it to Jesus, when the new religion gives Jesus everything except the one thing that he was called to do? They never mentioned him anywhere as the Passover lamb, which is the one thing he was called to do, and they give him everything that he is just not, you know.
Not a son.
No. And so,
well, by doing that, since we don't have anything he actually said, they can put all the words they want in his mouth and create the religion that they wanted.
And yes. What they in essence did, since there isn't a single prophecy that names Yahusha by name, not one, what they ultimately did is realize, well, you know, there's 1,000 prophecies regarding Dode, probably even more than that. So if we simply replace Dode's name with Yahusha, then we can claim all 1,000 prophecies, and everything that God promised Dode can be our guy, and we can turn Jesus into God. Because, I mean, it even says that Dode's going to be as brilliant as the sun. We can just turn Jesus into God. We're going to make the Passover lamb God. And all they had to do was take every promise that was made to Dode. There's only one problem with that. Every promise was made to Dode. And Yahweh said, if it's not to Dode that I have made these promises, then you need to call me a liar. And now you've got a religion based upon the God that inspired the Torah, prophets, and Psalms being a liar. And there's no one of the 2.5 billion Christians that says, whoa, we got a problem. How can we claim that our religion is based upon the prophecies of that God, and yet we're saying that God's a liar? No real problem. So this begins. Yeah, God raised him from the dead so that we will never be subject to decay. Now, excuse me. We got two problems here. The first is, God didn't raise him from the dead. Is there any example anywhere that the Passover lamb comes back to life?
No.
Nope.
No, not at all.
I've read the Exodus account where Yahweh finally says, okay, we've had enough with the Egyptians. The final line is going to be Pesach. And it's all about the Passover lamb. And the Passover lamb is going to be the doorway to life. By the way, the miracle of the Passover lamb is that it's not nourishing for you. Forget about that part. Not, but you barbecue, it tastes really good. Forget about that part. Forget about the fact that it's the doorway to life. No. For you to live. No, the miracle of the Passover lamb is that after you consume it, you slaughter it, you barbecue it, you consume it, you eat it all up. Yummy, yummy. Oh, and by the way, the miracle of the Passover lamb is after you've eaten it all up, it comes back to life.
That would be kind of gross.
Wouldn't that be gross? Well, you know, vomit it up, and oh, boy, after I vomit it up, it's alive.
That's really...
It's just disgusting. So I'm telling you, first of all, God didn't die. God can't die. The Passover lamb can die, and so the body of Yosha could die, but his soul didn't die. His soul went into Sheol. Now, the second thing is that the sacrifice of the Passover lamb has nothing to do with decay. All of those Israelites, every single one of them, that prevailed that night by celebrating Pesach, is there any one of them whose body didn't decay?
No.
Every one of them did they? Mm-hmm. Everyone continued to age. Everyone continued to age. Everybody was subject to decay. As a matter of fact, if you want to go forward and look at Jesus, every one of his disciples now is worm rot, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Paul, do you see Paul walking around now?
No, I mean, he's been eaten by the worms, too.
Dude's body is subject to decay, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, it is absolutely a fact that God didn't die, therefore he couldn't be raised from the dead. The Passover lamb is never restored to life, and the purpose of the Passover lamb has nothing to do with us being no longer subject to decay. As a matter of fact, even as it relates to Yosha on Bukurim, his new body was so radically different than the one that had been incinerated as the Passover lamb on the evening of Passover that no one even recognized him. And he could teleport and he could walk through walls and extraordinary. And he missed it all. So that statement is God didn't raise him from the dead, and he has nothing to do with decay, and oh, by the way, God can't die. You know, this idea of Christianity, God died for your sins. No, he didn't. God cannot die.
If your God can die, you need to get a new God.
You need a good new God. Yes. And if your religion is based upon this notion that you are not going to decay, that's the miracle, is God died so you're not going to decay, or God raised him from the dead so you're not going to decay, well, you got a real problem with that, because there isn't a single Christian, not a single Christian throughout all of history who hasn't decayed. Go dig up any Christian grave if you want to find that one out.
Yeah, right? That's actually, I read this a while back. That's actually a thing amongst Catholics, because in order to be canonized as a saint, you have to be able to perform 3 miracles. And
right.
A lot of times there are saints that have done 2 in their life, supposed miracles. So what they'll do is they will dig up their grave, and if the body is actually well-preserved, they will declare that a miracle. Therefore, they can canonize them.
So why not canonize all
the
pharaohs?
Invest in a really good, airtight coffin so your body stays nice and preserved.
Let's canonize all the
pharaohs. Lenin was pretty good, too. He was he stuck enough stuff in him to keep him going.
I turned him to wax. Yeah. As long as the air conditioners work, he's fine.
That's true.
And as God said, I will give you the holy and sure blessings promised to David. Acts 13:34. They've got a problem with that. Now, listen, at long last, Shaul has turned his attention to David. Unfortunately for Christians, what he claims God has said regarding his proposed transfer of blessings from David to Jesus never occurred, thereby annulling Shaul's entire proposition. Now, theologians claim that their apostle was citing from Isaiah 55:3, but you got a problem with that. The problem with that is it says nothing of the kind. There is no, I'm going to give you the blessings that I gave to David. Not even remotely close to that.
Well, how could he? I mean, it's...
Well, the only way God put him to be a liar.
Yeah, exactly.
As with everything else Paul used to prove replacement theology, he had to be deceitful. By removing this prophecy regarding the actual Messiah and the Son of God, Dode, from the discussion in which it was presented by misquoting it and misapplying it, there was something that Paul actually proved. We're going to give him credit for one thing. He did prove that he was a con man who could not be
true. Mm-hmm.
That's all he proved. It also speaks to Paul's arrogance, as well as his utter disdain for those he played for fools, billions of Christians that he played for fools. The 55th chapter of Yahshiyah, Isaiah, opens with Yahweh speaking to us. He is openly refuting the Pauline and Roman Catholic notions that men should seek to have their thirst quenched and be nourished by men, and that the faithful should pay such men for what they are offering by giving them their money. Now note that everything which follows was presented under the auspices of free will. It's our choice, your choice. Woe, everyone who thirsts, you should come of your own accord to actually walk to the water, being led to the benefits of the relationship without monetary compensation. Wanting to come while choosing to acquire grain which has been literally inspected and examined and then crushed by choice, and then decide to be genuinely nourished. Well, how many churches do you think would exist if the Roman Catholic Church had said, oh, by the way, everything that we're offering is what God's offering. He didn't charge for it, so we're not going to charge for it.
Won't happen.
How many priests would there be? No priests.
They all work.
No churches.
All work for money.
All work for money. It's all about the coinage.
Absolutely.
All about the gold. Of your own accord, come without money. Do you think there's ever been a Catholic service? Well, they didn't ask for money.
No, it's always a begging day. Always a begging day.
The most famous American preachers, like Copeland, Benny Hinn,
mm-hmm.
these guys are worth tens of millions and hundreds of millions of dollars flying around on private jets.
Yeah.
Why? Because they're always asking for money.
Yeah.
Of your own accord, God says, come without money. Hey, JB, do you have a donate button on your site?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. Has anybody ever paid you for a translation, Kirk?
No, of course not.
No. Well, you know how much money has been donated to, I've been doing this now for almost 19 years. You know how much money I've received through donations during that period of time?
Probably zero.
Zero. Absolutely nothing. I've spent a lot of money trying to make sure that this
way.
Like this program, it doesn't come free. You want to have on it, we want to have no advertising and be able to say what you want to say and then have access to and be able to do what you want to the content, the blog talk. You pay a pretty penny for it. We're not getting paid to do this. We're paying for the opportunity to share the truth with you freely. Of your own accord, come without money and without compensation or fee. You know, you want to convey Yahweh's message, you damn well better give what you know away free. You better not charge for it. And acquire grain which has been inspected and examined, then crushed. And the finest wine and most beneficial milk. Now, if people stop paying ministers and no longer made donations to their church, they would no longer be fed lies. As it is, the faithful are paying for their own demise. Yep. We've been doing this a long time. Mm-hmm. This is the first time we have seen this many verbs in succession, all in the imperative mood, denoting that all of this is our choice. Expression of our desire and ours alone, and that it is all available without monetary compensation. We don't need to leave a donation at a church while participating in communion or a Eucharist. We go directly to God instead. Unlike men, He provides everything for free. Now, it's ironic that the Roman Catholic Church, of course, was funded on indulgences, and that Protestant ministers proclaimed that salvation is the gift of God, and yet expect to be paid for the pronouncement. You know, when I told the late Jerry Falwell that everything he was saying about God was untrue, the multi-millionaire televangelist bemoaned, but if I were to reveal this publicly, those who sit in the pews of my church and make donations and the letters which arrive each day in the mail to support my university would cease. And if you do so, they'll label you a kook. It's a privilege. We aren't the first, we won't be the last. But it's a great privilege to be labeled a kook by those who are fooled into believing religion. Yahweh asked the religious, why do you consistently spend your money on that which is not bread, and then labor for that which is neither fulfilling nor satisfying?
Have a question.
You choose to listen diligently. You should choose to listen diligently to me and actually hear what I have to say. Now, that in itself is interesting. God constantly encourages us to listen to Him.
Mm-hmm.
But the Roman Catholic Church would say, oh, no, you can't do that because you need us to interpret it for you.
Yeah, and they burned you.
Rabbi, look at that. You can't read the Torah.
Somebody's got to really tell you what to explain it.
Yeah. Well, God is saying, you should choose to diligently listen to me and actually hear what I have to say. Shama. Matter of fact, it's Shama. Elani. Your own free will, you should want to make the decision to literally pay attention and hear what I, as God, am saying to you. And elect to consume, being nourished by, that which is beneficial and good, Tob. And then acting on your own initiative, unaffected by outside influences, continuously take great pleasure in. The best is of what is produced and offered. The most enriching and fulfilling things for your soul. You know how you find the most fulfilling things for your soul?
in the Torah by reading it.
Listen to what God has to say. He told us that.
Mm-hmm.
Choose to listen to what I have to say, and then you will find the best of what is produced and offered, the most enriching and fulfilling of things, that which is the most beneficial and good.
Compare to anything else in your life and tell me what was better.
Right.
What was more nourishing? What was more... those of us, like J.B., you know, who translates so well, is like, what was better that he could learn? It's eternal. We're talking about eternity here, not just, I learned how to paint a picture or play around the golf, or I did this, or I did that, or I ran my business, or you ran your whatever, and I don't even mean to internalize it. I'm just whatever you do. Nothing is rewarding and satisfying like this.
Interesting here is that anagba was, which is delight and indulgence, exquisitely joyous aspects of the best of what is produced and offered. It was a verb that was shaded by the hitpael imperfect. Hitpael is probably the least common of the stems. And what it means is that you should act on your own initiative. You should not be affected by outside influences. And what God is saying there is, listen, there's a lot of influence. Religion has the greatest influence on human societies. There is no institution of man that is more influential. And second to that would be governments, political influences,
mm-hmm.
and they usually join.
Mm-hmm.
And a third would be military influences, and those three are usually all tied together. So God's saying, don't be swayed by religious influences. Don't be moved by political influences. Don't be in any way influenced by society. Instead, of your own initiative, continually take great pleasure in the best of what's produced and offered for your soul. And in our society, is there any organization, whether it's the media or entertainment celebrities or sports figures or military heroes, or political leaders, or religious institutions that is saying, you know what you ought to do is take great pleasure in the best of what is produced and offered for your soul by listening to what Yahweh has to say. Is there anything that would encourage people to do that?
No.
If you're going to do it, you're going to do it on your own initiative. Because there's no part of society that's encouraging you to do what God just requested.
Isn't everything in everything about the walk to Yahweh of your own initiative? I mean, you have to walk through the Passover door yourself. I mean, you can't push me through, and JP can't pull me through. And, you know, you have to be secure in the knowledge that this is what Yahweh said, and go for it. You know, so it's very consistent.
You know, yes.
So sure.
So, it's our choice individually. We can freely receive that which is good for us from Yahweh, or we can make donations to men and human institutions and consume their poison. Now, we should be amazed by Paul's bombastic arrogance. He thinks so little of those he's deliberately misleading, and it's deliberate, that he believes that he can pluck out and pervert prophetic statements from discussions when considered in context, they totally destroy his credibility. And he thinks he can do so without getting caught or without being held accountable. He was wrong in every way but one. The religious are universally unwilling or unable to question the basis of their faith, even when their own scriptures are shown to be completely invalid. Christian clerics throughout the ages, searching the Torah and prophets, have come to the conclusion that Paul was quoting Isaiah 55:3 and Acts 13:34, as we began this program by attesting. But when they discovered that it didn't read as Paul had claimed, not one sought to condemn Paul as a charlatan. Not one. Worse, when they came to realize... Pardon me?
I just looked them up, a bunch of them, and they're all saying this is, yeah, exactly that. Today, right here on...
Yeah, right here. And that the opposite is true. So either they're all complete idiots, or they're all complete liars. Now, one of those are the only two options. That is not what's written in Isaiah 55:3. It says nothing of the sort. So either those who claim that it does to support Paul are complete ignoramuses who ought not be opening their yap and saying anything because they're just stupid, or they're lying. There is no record of any church father acknowledging the obvious, that Paul was contradicting God while claiming that he had been authorized by him. Now, that's an irrational impossibility, and not one exhibited the initiative to do what we're doing right now, which is to consider the context of what was being revealed to determine what God actually had to say on this and every other matter. I mean, this isn't a curiosity. This drives to the very heart of what's wrong with replacement theology and for Christianity. These citations and irrational arguments explain why Paul not only started attacking and demeaning Jews, but had to turn to Gentiles to prevail. Well, the people to whom the Torah was given knew that Shaul, Paul, was lying through his teeth. Goyim, unlike Yehudim, were clueless. And that's why Paul condemned the Jews. You know, it played out exactly the same way 700 years later. When Muhammad needed credibility for his new religion, he had taken everything the Hanif in Yemen had said about their God, and he had plagiarized all of it. You know, so he had run that well dry, and he didn't have any credibility. So when he went to Yathrib, and 75% of the community was Yahudim and Yisrael, and the rabbis actually had credible material, And he paid them to share Talmud stories with him. And then he twisted them to give his religion not only credibility, but to serve his interests. There was one group of people that knew that he was lying through his teeth. The rabbis and the Jews who had sold it, Talmud stories. And so what did Muhammad do? The same thing Paul did. He turned on. And he told the ignorant, the goyim, hey, these people, they're mocking me. These people God hates. The people that actually know that I'm lying, he didn't say that, but that's what happened with Muhammad and with Paul. The people that can prove that I'm lying, you need to go kill. Muhammad did exactly the same thing Paul did. Paul turned on Jews because Jews could prove that he was lying through his teeth. That is what happened. That's why the Christian New Testament is anti-Semitic. The people that knew he was lying had to be obliterated. So this is what Yahweh actually said. Incline your ear. Which means what? Listen to me. Incline your ear and walk to me. He didn't say, don't listen to me. Don't walk to me. What you need to do is listen to Paul. Doesn't say that, does it? It doesn't say, oh, by the way, I want you to ignore Dode and everything I promised him because I'm hereby giving every promise that I gave to Dode. I'm giving it over here to Jesus. It says, listen to me. Incline your ear and walk to me. Elect to listen, and your soul shall live. So it's by listening to what God said. Now, this is in Yeshaya 55:3. Had the Christian New Testament been written?
Nope.
No.
It wouldn't be written for another 700 years. Paul's letters. Not a one of them. No Gospels. God is saying, listen to me. Which means you need to listen to the Torah and prophets and the Mizmor. That's the only way you can listen to God. In 700 BCE, you'd have to read the Torah, you'd have to read the Mizmor of Dode, and you would be able to listen to the prophets. That's it. So it's the opposite of Christianity. It's not, but I, Paul, say, there's no Christian New Testament, there's no Jesus. God says, listen to me. Walk to me, and your soul shall live. Now, doesn't Christianity claim that the Torah can't save, the God of the Old Testament can't save? You can only be saved by your faith in Jesus?
Yes.
Well, God just said the opposite, didn't he?
Yes, he did. You know, Jackie asked, made a statement yesterday in a conversation we were having, and it was like, yeah, I thought she was really good. I wrote it down. She said, what value, I'm probably misquoted, but what value would a relationship that Yahweh would have with Yosha to give all those things away? If let's just say it was true and he gave it to him, how could he possibly have any relationship with Yosha?
Okay.
That's him.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Like
your example of gold with a little flick of gold, you know, still it's already gold. So what are you going to, what's raised up? What's improved?
The best you could say about Yosha is that when the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him, just as the Spirit of Yahweh came upon Dod, is that Yosha with the Spirit of Yahweh on him, just like Dod with the Spirit of Yahweh on him, is now representing Yahweh. But the physical body is not God.
No.
The physical body of Dod is no more God than the physical body of Yosha. God was no more born as baby Jesus as God was born with baby Dod. God's not born. And the best you could possibly say of Yosha was that as the Passover lamb, he served as the diminished manifestation of Yahweh. If Yahweh is going to present a diminished manifestation, why in the world would he want to add something to it? If Yahweh wanted Yosha to be the Mashiach, wouldn't he have anointed him?
Of course.
But he didn't.
If he wanted him, but that's not what he wants.
If Yosha was the Mashiach, wouldn't he say, hey, dudes, I'm the Mashiach? If Yahweh wanted Yosha to be the Mashiach, don't you think there'd be like 100 prophecies about him becoming the Mashiach and he'd be called out by name?
You would hope.
But there's not. There's not one. If Yosha was supposed to be the Son of God, wouldn't you expect a whole bunch of prophecies that say, oh, by the way, Yosha's going to be the Son of God? There's not one. But Dode's called the Son of God. Dode's called the Mashiach. Dode was anointed not once, but three times by Yahweh. I said, well, I didn't forget about that because the Spirit of Yahweh came upon him like a dove. Well, excuse me. Do you think the Spirit of Yahweh comes in the form of doves? Every time I go find a dove out there, that's the Spirit of Yahweh. You think the set-apart spirit is a bird? I'm sorry. But is there any prophecy that says, oh, by the way, the set-apart spirit is going to come upon Yosha? Not one. But it sure as heck says that the set-apart spirit is going to come upon Dod, powering him. All right, let's finish this statement, because this is Yeshayah 5:3. Incline your ear, which means listen to me, and walk to me. There's only one way to walk to Yahweh. That's through the Moed Mikre. It's seven steps to God. Elect to listen, and your soul shall live. Chariot, be restored. I will establish a momentary covenant, an old covenant that, of course, I will annul through Paul, and then I will create a new one that's completely different with an entirely different people. So with other people, based upon my unreliable and unestablished, well, it can't be mercy because the God of the Old Testament isn't mercy, on my vengeance, based upon my love for Yosha. Is that what, how Yeshayah 55:3? He would have to say that for Paul to be right. No. Doesn't say that at all. I will establish karat, cut, an everlasting olam, never ending. So if you've got a covenant that's never ending, how can you have a new one?
One that ends, yeah.
And if you can't have a new one because the existing one is eternal, you can't have a new religion. There can be no New Testament, no new covenant. You're screwed, blued, and tattooed if you're a Christian. I'm sorry, it's over for you. The very line that Christians now claim that Paul was quoting from destroys any chance that your religion has any validity. I will establish an everlasting covenant for you. Who's he talking to? Anybody ever bother to look up who the book of Yeshayah is devoted to? Who he's speaking to? Who is you here?
Told is you. He told me to do
it. Well,
it's
those people. It's Yisrael. It's Yahuda.
He's representing.
Yeah, it's Yisrael. It's Yahuda. That's who you is?
Mm-hmm.
What is this eternal covenant? It is based upon, God said, it's based upon me giving every promise I made to Dode to Jesus. That's what Paul just said, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't say that, though, here in the text, does it? For you.
No.
Based upon my verifiable and established, my aman, my enduring and everlasting, trustworthy and reliable, readily confirmed, unending love and unfailing devotion, chesed, steadfast mercy and genuine affection for Dode. Paul lied. Paul lied. Christians, wake up. He lied. What he said in his text, that God gave all the promises to Dode to Jesus, is an outright lie. This says, based upon my verifiable and established unending love and unfailing devotion for Dode. Period. The author and inspiration for half of the Christian New Testament lied on the fulcrum, the very premise of the Christian religion. If the promises made to Dode aren't transferred to Jesus, Jesus is nothing but the Passover lamb, and Christianity doesn't even recognize him as that. You've got nothing, Christians. Nothing. And the fact is, Paul lied. We're not talking about, maybe he stretched a little. We're not talking about, maybe he cited this from the Septuagint and it was different. No, that's a bold-faced lie. And every Christian theologian, every Christian scholar, every Christian pastor that went to Bible school knows it. And they continue to lie to you. It's the opposite of what Paul claimed that God had said. Yahweh asked us to listen to him, not to Paul. This has nothing whatsoever to do with him, as in Jesus, but was instead written of doubt. It's an eternal and dependable, verifiable, and established promise to Dode about the establishment of an everlasting covenant, which enables us to walk to God so that our souls can live by listening to Yahweh. That's what it says. It is the opposite of Christianity. It was not about never being subject to decay. It was not about being raised from the dead. Instead of God giving holy and sure blessings promised to David, to you, whomever you may represent, whether that be Paul, his church, Gentiles, or even his man-God as a replacement, Yahweh is affirming the establishment of an everlasting covenant for those who listen to him, based upon his verifiable and trustworthy, enduring, and unfailing love for Dode. If you are a Christian, it's time for you to throw away your New Testament. It's time for you to condemn Paul rather than going to Bible studies and pretending that he spoke for God. There is no basis whatsoever for the religion. 2.5 billion people today are being played for fools. Yosha, you don't even know his name, Christians. Yosha was nothing more and nothing less than the Passover lamb. And you don't even celebrate Passover. It's pathetic.
I don't know what Masa is. Yeah.
It's disgusting. Now, there's a part of this, too, that we've hardly even hinted at. Can you imagine being a father? And you say to your son, you are my son, I am your father. You say to your son, you are the shepherd of my people. You say to your son that when I return to my people, you're coming with me. You say to your son, I'm anointing you. I'm empowering you. And then you have men say, let's disregard all of that. Let's take everything God promised to the man that he chose and let's give it to our God who is modeled after Dionysus. How do you think God feels about that? How would you feel as a father if everything you said was twisted and every promise you made was afforded to someone else and taken away from your people? Worse, Paul claimed that the Jews were now hated by God, when in fact they are Dode's people, and these promises were made to them. Yeah, I'm going to tell you, God's a test.
Yeah.
He despises this. Because his love is for his people. If you're a Goyim, your only way to God is by listening to what God said through his people, Jews. If you're a Goyim and hate Jews, if you're part of the modern conspiracy and you're anti-Semitic, you need to know that God hates you. You need to know there is a 0% possibility that you will ever see heaven. Because the only way a Goyim, a Gentile, can be part of the covenant family is to identify with Yisrael, to embrace Yisrael, to become the essence of what Yahudah represents, which is beloved of Yahweh. By listening to what Yahweh said through the likes of Dode, to embracing Dode as the Son of God and the Messiah. And if you can't do that, you have a 0% possibility of being saved. That is the message here. God didn't transfer anything away from Dode. And Paul claimed the antithesis of it, which means that Paul lied. And by the way, it doesn't take a comparison between what Paul said and what God said to know that God lied.
It doesn't. Because there's absolutely no basis for the claims Christians make. There is absolutely no basis for trusting a God who would renege on everything he says. The whole concept of believing that Paul spoke for God requires you to be either ignorant or irrational. That God would pick a man to contradict everything he had to say, to demean the very people that he loves and has promised to restore. You just have to be a tiny bit rational, a tiny bit informed, and you will know that Christianity is based on a lie, that it's a complete and utter fraud. No matter how many spectacular cathedrals they have, no matter how many televangelists, no matter how much money they have, no matter how many devotees they have, in fact, according to God, if you have lots of devotees, if you're popular as a religion, then you're wrong. The way is narrow, and few find it that leads to life.
So what,
the way
what
is wrong,
hope?
And many find it that lead to death.
I mean, this is so obvious, so black and white. What is the hook that keeps them when it's presented? I mean, first of all, you have to read it. You know, you have to see the truth. You have to read something like this or talk to someone who knows this. But how do they hang on? So what is they? It has to be what you said a long time ago, and most of us agree that it's because now they don't know what to do because of all that. Like my sister with the, when I told her this, a lot of this stuff, her, not seeing Mama just blew her away. That Mama wouldn't be there for her, and her grandparents wouldn't be there for her. It's all about that, isn't it? The death.
Yeah.
That must be the biggest hook in the world. It really must be.
It is. Yeah, there's a false promise.
We heard that a lot when we first started talking about all of this, and she had just recently lost her father.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So she came to realize, you know, if he was wrong, I don't want to be wrong too.
Right.
Well, that's the wise decision.
Yeah. Right. So you can cling to your religion and hope against hope that you're going to see your deceased father again, and only be shattered that both you and your deceased father have ceased to exist. Or you can realize that your deceased father was wrong. He was among the many who were misled, and it would be stupid.
But then they will put it on
what would he want from you?
Yeah.
Would
your deceased father
want you to follow him in error, or would he want you to come to learn the truth?
And by the way, what he would want is irrelevant. It really is irrelevant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the only thing that's relevant is what God is offering. If you want to escape this, you can do whatever you want to with your life. You have free will. Do whatever you damn well please. But if your goal is to see heaven, if your goal is to get to know God, then there's only one individual's voice who matters. Yahweh's.
Yep.
And you only get to know what Yahweh said if you listen to what he revealed through Yahudim. That's it. And the single most prolific of those who spoke for Yahweh are his beloved son, his Messiah, and his king and his shepherd, Dod. Now, let's just compare. Incline your ear and walk to me. Listen, and your soul shall live. I will establish an everlasting covenant on your behalf based upon my verifiable and trustworthy, unending love and unfailing devotion for Dod. With Paul's, God raised him from the dead so that he will never be subject to decay. As God has said, I will give you the holy and sure blessings promised to Dod. It didn't even... There ain't one word of it that's accurate. Not one word of it. Paul was deliberately misquoting and misappropriating the word of God. And therefore, there's only one sane, rational thing to do. Reject everything Paul had to say. Throw away the Christian New Testament. It is that obvious. It's that clear cut. If you can't process that, then you are beyond reach. You are beyond hope. If you're just going to claim, well, I don't want to believe that, and kiss your sorry soul goodbye, there's no hope for you.
I don't have to take anybody with you.
Yeah, I'm constantly, still asked, you should really simplify all of this and at least write something that that just conveys the gist of this message, because there's such a world out there and so few people are going to devote the time and the energy to read even, your written in stone. That may be just over 100 pages, but it's too dense for most people. Simplify it. Make it more popular. Make it more easily assimilated. No. Because the very first thing you have to do is to walk away from religion and politics. If you're not willing to do that, nothing else matters. And if you're not willing to give up on faith and instead base what matters most upon what God actually had to say, what he's offering and what he expects in return, and coming to understand it so that you can make a rational decision about it, then there's no hope. It isn't about dumbing it down. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, so I'm going to tell you that what I have written isn't all that cerebral. I'm simply translating the Word of God, and he's very clear. He's very easy to understand. It's all about having the want to. And if you really love what he has to say, you don't want a dumbed-down version. Why would you want God, who revealed in a very profound intellectual way, a way that is verifiable and demonstrable, enduring and everlasting, trustworthy and confirmed. Why would you want God's message to be dumbed down? If you got the most brilliant being in the universe communicating directly with you, should your first thought would be, can you dumb that down for me so it's easy to understand? Why wouldn't you want it as he revealed it so that you can have more? And if you don't want it that way, get out of the way. You're going to hate eternity anyway. There is no one in eternity with you. I was going to say, could you just dumb it down for me, please? Stop with being so verbose. If you can say this in 5 words, why are you saying in 500? I just don't need the lecture. Just tell me what I need to believe, and let's be done with it. Can you imagine somebody saying that in eternity? You're going to be clinging on every word. Teach me. I want to learn. I want to expand what I know and understand. I have direct access to the greatest teacher in the universe. And the last thing I'm going to ask him to do is dumb it down for me. Give me the short version, please. Well, why would you want the short version of it in eternity? If you now got everlasting life, wouldn't the most counterproductive thing to be to give me the short version?
Cut to the chase. No.
God, what I want you to do is say a lot less, please. Could you just please shush up? I want you to say a lot less because I want to start talking. Come on, folks. It's always telling that Paul passed over the declaration that the covenant was everlasting and that God's promises are verifiable and trustworthy. But he did, didn't he? It's especially revealing that he failed to mention the connection between Dode and the covenant, between the covenant and Yahweh's commitment to being loving and merciful. Why? Because what God actually said did not fit with Paul's approach. He also seemed to miss the part about listening to God and living as a result. In his fallacious attempt to rationalize the notion that faith saves and that the Torah condemns, Paul has yet to acknowledge anything God has said that would, if accurately presented, save anyone. He has deliberately and consistently misrepresented what God revealed, taking it out of context, misquoting it, and then stating the opposite of what God intended. He has done it so obviously and so often. It's a wonder that there are 5 Christians on the planet, much less 2.5 billion. Now, since we all benefit when we listen to what Yahweh had to say, let's consider what more he had to convey about Dode after the statement. The principal author of the Christian New Testament, a.k.a. the father of lies, the son of evil, and the plague of death perverted. It reads, "Behold, I have given him." Who's him? It's Dode. God just used his name, didn't he? He didn't say Jesus. Mm-hmm. He said Dode.
No.
Didn't say Paul or Shaul. He said Dode. "I have given him," Nathan Hugh, "I have bestowed and offered him, producing him," Ed, "as an eternal witness. To the people and nations who are governed by antiquated philosophies," Laom. "A worthy leader to instruct the nations mired in the past," Laom. You know, it's interesting that whole story of how did we get Dode in the first place? And it's really an interesting story. It shows God doing everything he could to accommodate his people. How did we get Dode? Well, you know how we got Dode? Because what did Yahweh establish? Yahweh established, he said, "All right, my people, I want to be your leader." Yahweh said, "I'm going to lead you." He led them out of Egypt. Mm-hmm. "I am your leader. I'll lead you." And then he spoke to them and said, "Oh, my God, don't speak directly to us. Your voice is too loud. You scare us to death. Stop speaking directly to us." So Yahweh said, okay, I get it. You know, you don't want me to speak directly to you. I'll inspire Moshe. Moshe will speak to you." All right? That's where it's going to be. All right, so God establishes the Shaphat, those who decide, those who exercise good judgment. Their job will be to share the Torah, and so when there's a dispute among men, they can resolve that dispute based upon the Torah. Really cool. That'll be how we'll manage our relationship together. Because you don't want me speaking directly to you, we'll do it through the Shaphat, those who exercise good judgment. Well, the last of the Shaphat was a fellow named Samuel. And Samuel is doing his job. He's really devoted, listens to Yahweh, doing his job, and the people decide that they don't like the Shaphat anymore. They don't like what Samuel's doing. They want themselves a king. They want to be just like the Gentiles. They want a king that will lead them into battle. Big, tall, handsome man that will lead them into battle. Somebody who's articulate. That's who they want. The opposite of what Paul, God intended. So, Samuel goes to Yahweh and said, "Oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. I failed you. The people want a king like the Gentiles, rather than to continue with your plan with the Shaphat. I'm so sorry, I failed you." And Yahweh said, no, you didn't fail me. They're not rejecting you, Samuel. They're rejecting me. One of the things that is just so essential to tell those who are political around the world.
Oh, yeah.
If you choose your government, you're voting for your government. If you're choosing your government, you participate in your government, you are rejecting God. That's what those words mean. There's no other way to interpret those words. If you want to be led by men, you want to participate in your government, then you're rejecting God. God went on to tell Samuel, if they want that, it's free will and all. They can have that. But you need to know the 12 things that king is going to do to them. And it just absolutely destroyed the credibility of the governments that would follow this notion that God authorizes governments, as Paul claimed in Romans 13. Couldn't be further from the truth. God makes it very clear that human governments are horrible things. So anyway, the people chose Shaul, free will and all. Shaul becomes their king. Well, he's rotten to the core. He corrupts the Torah. He twists the Torah. He takes the people into battle and he fails miserably. And so God says, all right, since they want a king, then I'm going to choose one for them. This is what they want, you know, free will and all. This one's going to fail. He's going to die. So the least that I can do, what I'm going to do for them is I'm going to show them the kind of person that I would choose, not who they would choose. They chose Shaul. I'm going to show them who I chose. And so he chooses Dodd. And he anoints Dodd. And he takes Dodd from being a shepherd out of Bethlehem to shepherd his people. He said, this is what you ought to be looking for. If this is what you want, then choose someone who is not a great soldier. Don't choose someone who is a great orator. Don't choose somebody because they're big, tall, and handsome. Stronger than the average person. Choose someone who is filled with my spirit, who is enabled by my spirit, who is a shepherd, capable of living with and leading and protecting the flock. And that's how we ended up with Dodd.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a lesson.
Great choice. Wow.
Since Yahweh has made Dodd an eternal witness on our behalf, why would anyone pass over the Psalms of the Son of God who wrote so much that we can benefit from? Why base a religion on the oratory and a pen of a man who would take from Dodd what Yahweh has offered to him? And of course, this says nothing about Yosha. It doesn't say anything about being holy. It says nothing about blessings. There wasn't a word of this or any other prophetic statement that even hints at transferring what God gave to Dodd to Yosha, to Shaul, or to the church, or to Gentiles. In fact, this actually seems more like Paul was jealous of Yahweh's enduring love for Dodd. And he tried to negate the fact that Yahweh presents Dodd as what Paul was claiming for himself as God's witness to the nations. That's what this says. That Dodd would be the witness to the nations, and he uses Laom so that Yahweh has positioned Dodd as the voice to the nations through the Mizmor, which is exactly what Paul was claiming for himself.
That's true.
So what did Paul do? He negated everything God proclaimed to Dodd.
Wow.
It's stunning.
Good point.
That Paul would go to the very places where Yahweh destroys his credibility to twist God's words such that they would be misrepresented and seem as endorsing him. To believe Paul, one has to be ignorant, irrational, or both. This is the ultimate dilemma for Christians. Without Paul's letters, there is no religion because Yosha was Torah observant. And affirming Yahud, who spoke for Yahweh. With Paul's letters, the religion is a grotesque lie from its inception to its execution. Fact is, there is no excuse to be a Christian. I can't call it the dumbest religion because Scientology may be dumber, Mormonism may be dumber, Islam may be dumber.
Islam.
But, you know, when you're vying for what is the dumbest religion, that's not a good thing.
No.
You know, it's one thing to do as I'm doing, which is to endeavor to more accurately and completely translate Yahweh's testimony from the oldest extant sources while sharing insights derived from what God revealed through his prophets. It's another altogether to claim, as Paul has done, that he was inspired and authorized to be God's witness to the world. I can and do err from time to time. Paul based his claims based upon what he said. He can't be afforded that latitude. And yet he is now purposefully and grossly misrepresented Yahweh's testimony four times during his first missionary journey. And on each occasion, he has led his audience into believing the opposite of what was actually inspired and written. That is a crime worthy of Sheol, in accordance with the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. Christian theologians, for misguided and selfish reasons, will try to exonerate Paul by suggesting that he was quoting from the Septuagint, but that ass won't fly. Paul wrongly claimed to be Gamaliel's best student in rabbinical school, where he would have become a Hebrew scholar and could have read what we're reading. He was a Jew who could have gotten it right had that been his intent. The fact is, according to God, Dod is right and Shaul was wrong. Beyond this, there is very little in Paul's self-proclaimed accounting that rings true. It's nothing but a fabric of lies from beginning to end. From the completely fabricated account of authorizing the killing of Stephen the martyr to meeting Jesus on the road to Damascus. His accounts are not only contradictory, they contradict the God he falsely claimed authorized and inspired him. While we have more than enough evidence to conclusively demonstrate that Paul was deliberately deceptive in his desire to replace and negate Dod, and that Paul was a false prophet, once again validating Yahweh's condemnation of him, there is more to the prophecy that, quite frankly, I didn't expect when I was translating it. Here are the next two statements. Speaking to his people and those willing to listen to him, Yahweh himself revealed, "Behold, you shall be called out, invited and summoned by a goy Gentile that you do not know, Yada." And further, a goy Gentile not known to you shall chase after you on account of Yahweh your God, and also on behalf of the set apart of Israel. For indeed, in truth, he will lift you up, and he will endow you with honor. Choose to seek Yahweh while he may be found. Choose to call him while he is near. Yeshayah 55:6. Now, that's profound, folks. Mm-hmm. What's that saying? And here's the Yahweh. All of his prophets are Yisrael and Yahudah. Mm-hmm. All of them.
Until.
And he's saying here that a goyim, a Gentile, whom you do not know, in other words, he's not named, is going to reach out to you. He's going to call out to you. He's going to kara you. He's going to invite you home. And further, it's a Gentile, not known to you, who's going to chase after you. Chase after who? Yisrael and Yehudah.
Yisrael and Yehudah.
Chase after you. Why? On account of Yahweh, your God.
Yeah.
And also brings up on behalf of the set apart of Israel.
Yes.
Why would God have to do this through a Gentile?
Because nobody volunteered.
There wasn't a single Yehudim willing. That's why.
Yeah, that's the only reason.
Only reason. Well, you know, I think there was another. I do. I think there was another.
Yeah.
And the other is that Jews have been full of themselves for a long time. Listen, I'm doing everything I can to invite Jews home,
mm-hmm.
to lift them up, to give them the honor that they deserve, to encourage them to seek Yahweh while he can be found. But, you know, the Jews who are religious, they're an arrogant lot. The Jews who are atheists, they're an arrogant lot. Israelis, they're an arrogant and stubborn lot.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's God's way of saying, you know, you went 2,500 years without listening to me. I've been there wanting to continue to communicate through you for 2,500 years, and not one of you has been willing to listen to me and speak for me. Not one. So I'm going to tell you what here. I'm a little humble pie. I want to call you home through a Gentile. I remember the first letter I got from a Jewish woman. And it was kind of like, how dare you? What in the world is going on here? This is my language. This is my Torah. This is the God of Abraham, Yishak, and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
And you're the only one translating in a way that makes sense? If you're taking my Torah, my prophets, my Psalms, my God, and you're a Gentile, and you're the only one who is presenting it accurately, and oh, by the way, knows the inside scoop that the set-apart spirit is feminine, that Yahweh's name is easy to pronounce, that the Torah means teaching, not law. Why is it that a Goyim knows this stuff and not my people? Yeah, it's hard. And I think that's part of this is that's why that, you know, Solomon, the dedication of the temple, the high water mark of Yisrael, doesn't get any better than that. The dedication of the temple. And he says, oh, by the way, there's an observant foreigner that's going to call you home. Here, the Gentile. He's the one that's going to invite you. He's the one that's going to lift you up. He's the one that's going to introduce you to God while he can still be found to Yahweh. I think that's part of it. I think it's, yeah, that God's people need to know, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, but you've been AWOL for 2,500 mm-hmm. years.
Mm-hmm. You step up to the plate.
Yeah. Come on. Get involved. Start listening. And, you know, after introductions have been made, wouldn't it be great if Yehudim then take the ball and run?
Absolutely.
Take the words and
yep.
and proclaim them?
Yeah.
And by the way, this does not say, and this is really important, this does not mm-hmm. say a Goyim is going to speak to other Goyim and is going to invite Goyim, and he's going to chase after Goyim, and that the Goyim are going to have this opportunity to choose Yahweh before he can be found. Doesn't say that, does it?
No. Nope. I got that right away.
No. This Goyim is speaking on behalf of and to Yisrael. That's what it says.
Yeah, I got it.
To the set apart of Yisrael. So the very concept of a Goyim reaching out to Goyim isn't what's happening here. You know, listen,
yes.
If you're a Goyim, if you're a, by ethnicity, not Jewish, and you hear what we're saying, you listen to what God has to say, and you choose to be part of the covenant family, welcome. But you weren't the target.
Congratulations, you are now Yehudim.
No, you're not
yeah, congratulations, exactly. You are now a Yehudim. You're now part of Yisrael.
Yeah.
But you're not the target audience. We're speaking to Yisrael. You know, when I started this 18 years ago, it was obvious from the first page that I wrote of the first chapter that the message was intended for Yisrael. And that if a goyim wanted to listen, wonderful. If a goyim wanted to capitalize on it, wonderful. Welcome to the family. But the message has always been intended for Yisrael and Yehuda for one reason and one reason alone.
Yeah.
That's God's will. That's God's intent. If we're going to convey His words, then we need to convey His words to His people, because that's what He is devoted to doing. That's what He's promised to do. Because He's going to reconcile His relationship with His people, and He can't do it until His people do two things. Walk away from religion and politics, and then listen to what He has to say. And choose Him. And since God never works alone, but always works through people, He had to find someone that would encourage them to do that. And that's why we're here. And, you know, occasionally now, we've got folks that don't like us at all. Now, how dare you make those claims? Because if God is saying this about this goy, and it wasn't plural, it was singular. And that's us. Then when they claim my transliterations and my translations of the, as their own, and convey a different message, puts them in a world of hurt, doesn't it?
Puts them in a world of hurt. Yeah, absolutely.
That's why a couple of programs ago I said, you know, let me give you a couple of sites that that are using what I wrote and the transliterations that I wrote and conveying a different message. This is not a good thing. It's a bad thing. God promised to do this. He's doing it. Now, if you think, oh, my, how dare you claim that, infer that this might be, you know, us. Well,
why?
Why don't you go find somebody else that's translating this
statement
for you in this concept and is destroying the credibility of the world's two largest religions in the process. And who is devoted to the very people that Goyim seemed to hate, and he's devoted to them. Why don't you go list them? You put together your list, you send it to me. And oh, by the way, stop inferring that to recognize the obvious, that God is choosing to convey this through us. Stop inferring that that's some kind of an honor. Because it isn't. You know, when God chooses to work with somebody, it's not an honor. What happened to Yashayah? What happened to Yirmiyah? What happened to Hosha? What happened to Moshe? What happened in Dode's life?
Yeah.
Isn't it an honor, folks? You're abused, you're condemned, people throw knives at you, shoot arrows at you, expose you, condemn you. And was Moshe the hairman? Did he have any attributes that somebody could say, well, he chose Moshe because, wow, he was really articulate. Yeah, he was articulate. No. No.
He was young and virile. He could do it. Yeah, sure.
Well,
80-some years old.
He had characteristics that God wanted to use for that particular mission, and he had flaws that were such
to be overcome.
That we would be able to see that, you know, God used that guy.
Therefore,
he could use me too. He could use me too. You know, my pronunciation of Hebrew words isn't very good. My pronunciation probably is not very good, period.
My pronunciation of English words isn't very good.
Yeah, I would go along with that. And yet, you know, if Yahweh chose a stutterer through Moshe, well, then...
I got a shot.
Yeah, I got a shot. You know, I've done my best, but I've got a busted up family.
Yeah.
Not across the board, but, you know, there's stuff that I just flat out don't get. And I did the best I could. But that doesn't disqualify me when you compare me to Dode. I mean, that dude had, man, that was a fractured family. Right?
Oh, yeah. Horrible thing.
But because Dode had a fractured family, he had empathy. For whom? The one family that matters, God's family. Because there's no more fractured family in the history of humankind than Yahweh and his people.
Yeah, I had someone pointed out a long time ago, and it made sense even then. You look at, go through Bava Sheet. All of the first families of that are mentioned, they're all dysfunctional families. You know, first family in the entire story, Cain murders Abel.
Right.
Yeah. Noah.
Oh, and the first wife, dysfunctional. Yeah, the first wife ended up corrupting the first husband.
The husband.
Yeah. Sure. Not so good there, huh? You know, first son murders.
Daughters get him drunk and sleep with him.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all dysfunctional.
Right.
There's not a single,
right,
what you would call, ideal family presented. Because there isn't. That's just nature. Yeah. That's human nature.
Can you name a more dysfunctional family than Lot?
No.
Hey, the other day, it was this morning. I woke up with a profound, I thought it was a profound insight anyway. I've always wondered, and it wasn't until this morning I finally figured it out. Did you know that that Abraham's wife was his half-sister?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Abraham's wife was his half-sister.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You know why that was? I finally figured it out this morning. I said, of course, that's why it had to be. I've always been troubled by that. Why would Abraham's wife, the mother of the covenant, be Abraham's half-sister? You guys got any idea? You guys were as unaware as I was until, I've been doing this for 18 years, and I finally figured it out this morning. I don't know why I even figured I know why I figured it out this morning. I was thinking about what would happen if you married a covenant member. Would she not be both your wife and your sister?
Yeah.
Wow.
You can't marry a covenant woman without her being both your wife and your sister. Correct?
Never thought of that.
True.
I didn't think about this morning. But it's true. Every marriage between a man and a woman who are both in the covenant is a marriage between brother and sister. And we're not talking about yucky ancestor. That's just the reality of it. We're brothers and sisters
in the covenant. That's the nature of the relationship.
Yeah. Right. We're brothers and sisters in the covenant. And therefore, so even as husband and wife, first and foremost, we're brothers and sisters in the covenant. That's why Abraham's wife was his half-sister. How about that?
Remember when we made that?
The details in the story work, huh?
Yeah. Wow. All I could think about this morning is how cold it was. I don't want to walk a dog. It must be the climate where you are.
It is. It
makes you think.
It is. I live in now.
Happy land.
In the happiest, most uplifting, most beautiful place I've ever been. The people are friendly, the environment is lovely, and it is unbelievably inspiring. This is such a wonderful place to live. And you know, I've still got my aches and pains. We all do. But there is something about inspiration when you're just in a wonderful place. I mean, and I find every word that Yah writes to be inspired. I'm sitting now, you know, and I'm living on this boat in the Caribbean. And it's a 360-degree view. I transform this boat so that I have what I call a sky lounge. And I put my, you know, I put a desk up here and a big, huge wraparound computer screen so I could write. And it is so inspiring to come up here. I mean, just, and I do the Dode thing now. I get up, and the first thing I do is translate.
Yeah,
and then write. And the last thing I do every day is translate and write. And it's.
I got to have my coffee first.
Well, yeah, I've gotten to the point now where I start even before the coffee stuff. But I have my little coffee makers right here, 5 feet from my desk.
My brain doesn't work till after the first cup of coffee.
Yeah. You know, I've just found that if you're, that the moment you start translating, the brain just kicks in. And,
oh, yeah. That's true.
It's, you know, and I'm living in a place now where, you know, I'm really dressed up if I actually wear flops as opposed to just go barefoot. You know, if I've got a pair of shorts rather than swim trunks, that is really, really getting dressed up for, you know.
You must be coming over.
I think I've put on a pair of long pants, slacks, once maybe in the last month or so. Shoes now, actual shoes. What are they for?
You don't even own a pair anymore?
No, you know, and I think that at least once in the last month I put on a belt. You know, it's just, you put on a T-shirt, you put on, they have these shorts now that are halfway between swim trunks and regular shorts. So you can go in the water and swim and they dry off quickly. And like, that's, and you know, if you really want to get dressed up, you put on flaps as opposed to go barefoot.
Yeah,
it's a really simple life. Incredibly simple life. But it's a beautiful. And it's inspiring. So it says, behold, you shall be called out, invited, and summoned, Kara. By the way, on the side of this vessel that I'm on, starboard and port side, in big letters, and in huge letters that are 6 feet tall on the back. You know what it says?
Well, I do, but I don't give it away.
Yeah, you've seen it.
Yeah.
Q-A-R-A. That's what it says. Behold, you shall Kara. The name of the boat. By a goy Gentile. You do not, you know, how long have we written under the name Yada? You do not Yada.
Yeah,
and
true.
Further, a Gentile, not Yada, to you, shall chase after you. You don't know him, but he's chasing after you. On behalf of Yahweh, your God, and also on behalf of the set apart of Israel, for indeed in truth, he will lift you up. He's going to endow you with honor. It doesn't say he shall be endowed with honor, does it? In fact, if it did, I'd probably stop right there and say, you know, this is really not for me. I got into this to convey Yahweh's message as accurately as possible on behalf of his people. And if it said, oh, yeah, he's really going to become distinguished, he's going to become honorable. Doesn't say that, does it? No. He is going to lift you up and endow you with honor. He's speaking to Yisrael. And then it doesn't say, choose to seek him, does it? It says, choose to seek Yahweh while he may be found. Don't postpone it, folks. You don't have much time left.
You really don't.
Choose to seek Yahweh while he may be found. Choose to Kara, call upon him while he is near. Each time the expressions Goy and Yada were referenced in the great Isaiah scroll, they were masculine, singular. According to Yahweh, there is a Goy engaged in Yada who is not only summoning God's people to read what Dod had to say, and Yahweh revealed, or Yahshayah revealed, but who is seeking to re-endow Yisrael and Yahudah with the honor and status Paul usurped from them, reintroducing them to Yahweh. He is doing for Yisrael and Yahudah the opposite of what Paul has done, seeking to undo the damage of Christianity. You know, when Yahweh chose Moshe, it wasn't because he was young and virile, because he was 80 years old. It wasn't because he was the best man on the planet, because he wasn't. He'd killed a man. It wasn't because he was articulate, because he was a stutterer. It was because that man was the only man on earth that not only knew the Egyptian system, the Egyptian religion, the Egyptian military, Egyptian politics, and the Egyptian language. He knew Egypt and had left Egypt because he despised it. He was the only one on the planet with those qualifications. And so for God to reach his people today, that person has to be someone who understands the religion of Christianity in particular, that has done so much damage and has recognized that it's false and walked away from it. That's it. God's consistent, and I think he's consistent.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who was political but is no longer political, but had been engaged in politics, knows politicians, so he knows why they ought not be trusted.
How they think, yes.
Yeah. That's if God is consistent. Since he isn't doing this for himself, but instead for Yahweh and on behalf of the chosen people, you're invited to benefit from what he has come to know, such that those who seek Yahweh may find him before it is too late. So this person, by the way, also has to be speaking in Yahweh's name, using Yahweh's name, because it said, come to know Yahweh, seek Yahweh while he may be found. It doesn't say, seek Hashem, does it? It doesn't say, seek the Lord, does it? It doesn't say, seek Jesus, does it?
Jesus?
No.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely not.
Seek
big point.
Yahweh. So this Goyim has to know Yahweh's name and call Yisrael to Yahweh on behalf of the person that God said is the very basis of the promises, the very confirmation and validation of the promises that are comprised in the everlasting covenant. So, put the pieces together, and the reason you ought to put the pieces together and come to understand that that person that God is speaking about is speaking to you right now is because this is what God wants you to know. He would not have said this in this context with all of those clues and insights if he didn't want you to pay attention to what you're hearing now. Said about him, said about Dod, and condemning Pauline Christianity. That's the reason this prophecy exists. It's the reason every prophecy exists, is that when it happens, you're in a position to recognize it. You're in a position to capitalize on it. If God didn't speak of it, then Jews would be put in a position that they're in throughout the Torah, which is don't follow the ways of the Gentiles. Well, God is saying, well, there is this
Gentile, before it's
too late, that's going to affirm the things of Dod, that's going to condemn the things of Paul, that's inviting you back to Yahweh. He's giving this mission the credibility he wants it to have, because he wants his children, he wants Israel to have the confidence to respond to that invitation. That's why he's doing it.
Well,
he's doing it on behalf of his people. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just thought it was even prophetic when Shalomay or Solomon, declared that, and he's saying he'll bring you home when he is the pinnacle of all of them being together.
Yeah.
So he's obviously talking about a very, very, very far away time. So, you know, every clue is there for you. I mean, if you just
this has become seek Yahweh before it's too late. Seek him while he is close. Well, Yahweh is so close, he is returning in year 6000 Yahweh, which is 2033. He's really close. You better seek him now while he's close. He's not speaking of what was happening in 700 BCE because Yahweh wasn't close then. There was plenty of time. We're running out of time.
Truly, truly are.
It is just so amazing that, and it's exactly what you'd expect of God.
Mm-hmm.
If he's going to have prophecy, what's the purpose of prophecy? Is empowering his people with the information they need so that they can come to know him and respond to him. And since his message has been so twisted and so garbled by religious and political entities, he's saying, you know, there's a goyim out here. And he's going to give it to you straight. That's what he's saying. And the purpose of the prophecy is so that you can recognize it and capitalize on it. Not for his sake, for your sake.
Yeah. Just keep it clear here. This is for you.
This is for you.
Why don't you want to go there? Yeah, why don't you want to go home?
This is for you if you're a Jew. This is for you if you're a Israelite. This is for you even if you're a goyim.
Yeah.
But now we're dealing with the time where all of the promises Yah has made to Israel and to Yehuda are coming to fruition. Unlike Dod and Shaul, both of whom were mentioned by name, this particular man is a nameless goy whose merit is based solely upon what he knows and on behalf of whom he is working. And yet, based upon Yahweh's frequent prophecies about him and the work he is doing, it would be unwise to discount what he has discovered by searching Yahweh's words. Said another way, I would not advise labeling him a kook.
That's good, lad. That's funny. That's a
little side joke there, but for those who have, you know, been paying attention,
I
have a sense of humor, and so ought we. Since there are no statements to be found in the whole of the Torah, Navi, and Mizmor, which read as Shaul Paul has claimed, and since it only takes a matter of moments to prove that Paul not only misquoted God, but promoted the opposite of what God was actually revealing. Why isn't a single Christian, not one, held them accountable? Telling the world that the basis of their religion has been fabricated on a web of lies. This realization is material, it's obvious, it's undeniable, it's irrefutable. You know, quite frankly, this is all quite pathetic and appalling. It's so few people know the truth when it's this obvious. Well, I'm going to share this and then we'll pick it up again this time next week. It says, This is Paul saying, so it is also stated elsewhere. Well, you got a problem with that. Also stated elsewhere. Since also means that what he previously stated was something God has stated, and we've just proved that God said nothing.
That's true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You will not let your Holy One see decay. Now, is there any place where God says, you will not let your Holy One see decay?
No, and he wouldn't say holy.
No.
But hey,
Acts 13:35. No. Once again, Paul is usurping what was said of Dod and applying it to his Jesus, thereby discrediting the Son of God and the Messiah. This citation is from the 16th Mizmor Psalm, where Dode is the sole author, Dode is the subject, Dode is the speaker, and Dode, by the way, is the beneficiary. That's Jesus. It begins. An engraving of Dode. Keep your focus on me and be observant, closely examining and carefully considering what I am doing. Because you, God, I confide in you, and I rely on you, placing my trust in you. The song continues. I will commend Yahweh, who provides me with advice and counsel, keeping me informed so that I can think properly. Even during the night, my inner nature, where I discern between right and wrong, instructs and corrects me. I have continually and intensely desired to set Yahweh before me, seeking to be like him, because by me being right, I shall never waver nor fail. Therefore, as a result, my judgment is enlightened and uplifted, and the significant distinction and honorable reward associated with me will ecstatically delight. My body and the good news I proclaim shall abide and remain, living confidently and established securely. Therefore, you will not abandon my soul to Sha'ul. Neither will you permit your trusting and devoted one to witness the prism of corruption and decay. You have revealed and made known to me such that I understand the path to an abundant and joyous life in your presence. Because being found agreeable and acceptable, I'll be at your right side forever. Mizmor, lyrics to be sung, 16:11. Whoa, that didn't speak of Jesus, did it?
No.
Nope.
So, what on earth is Paul stating here? It says exactly the opposite. This is all about Dode. We're even told here we should observe Dode. Aren't we?
Yeah. Well, for sure. He's the shepherd. Why wouldn't you pay attention to his given directions? And it's pretty straightforward. I mean,
if he was inspired by Yahweh as a prophet to write these Mizmor Psalms, why shouldn't we observe them, pay attention to them, learn from them, act upon them?
Absolutely.
Is there any place where Dode contradicts Yahweh? Does Dode ever say, okay, this is what God said. I'm going to misquote him, by the way. But pay no attention to that. This is what I have to say.
Never.
Is there any place that Dode contradicts God?
Never.
So who are you going to trust?
He's right. Of course you're going to trust Dode if you got a brain.
Yeah.
I know it.
Never see that I, Dode, say.
No, you never see it. Yeah.
No. I know what Yahweh said, but, you know, as I was coming down the hill, as we talked, I decided, you know, what he probably meant to say, hardly.
Yeah, what's really interesting is Yahweh quotes Dode.
Yeah, that's cool. So does Yosha.
Yosha even quoted Dode. Does Yosha ever quote Paul? No. But Yosha quotes Dode.
Yosha tells us about Paul. Says there's a wolf coming.
Yes, he did.
He'll snatch you right away, man. Don't pay no attention to the wolf.
Yeah, don't pay no attention to that wolf.
Oh, yeah.
All right, fellas. Yeah. It's time we say good night. I know that part of this program was redundant. It's just that when you have something this profound, this is the crucible. This is the fulcrum upon which the religion of Christianity was fabricated. And so... I guess we could go over this 10 times and just keep on emphasizing this, because it is so obvious that the very foundation of Christianity is rotten. And if you place your faith in it, it will disappoint you. You have been lied to.
Yeah.
Paul did not speak for God. He spoke for the demon that possessed him.
Yes. Yeah. And no argument here. That's absolutely correct. Well named. Plague of death. Yeah.
Yeah, the plague of death.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fellas, thank you so much. We're going to be with you this time next week. I'm glad the technology is working. I'm delighted that it looks like we found a place where we're going to be able to communicate effectively. So thank you all.
Have a good
Shabbat Shalom. Yeah. Until, yeah, very simple place. A simple kind of works, too. Unpretentious place. Happy to be here.
Okay.
Shabbat Shalom.
I'll see you there, my friends.
Good night.
Good night, JB.